Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again on Circles of Change. It's a pleasure now to catch up with a colleague in Maryland across the country, Dr. Jenny Whitelaw. How are you this morning, Jenny?
I'm doing just fine. And how are you?
Oh, couldn't be better. It's always a pleasure, particularly to speak with someone else who likes to ruffle around the change dynamic, but also is a published author. So let me briefly introduce Jenny. She leads a management consulting practice under the banner of Focus Leadership and holds a doctorate in biophysics. Also a fifth degree black belt in Aikido, Jenny is a Zen master with the Shaizanji line of Rinzai Zen. I'll let you correct me later on that. Formerly a leader at NASA as the deputy manager for integrating the space station program, today, Jenny is based in Maryland, where she also founded and leads the Institute for Zen Leadership. Her passion is developing global leaders, which she has had enjoyed that opportunity for nearly 20 years in partnership with companies such as Novartis, Dell, T. Rowe Price, Sprint, Mercer, Precor, Ascension Health, and Bank of America. And her new book and our topic today is The Zen Leader, 10 Ways to Go from Barely Managing to Leading Fearlessly. I like that fearlessly component, Jenny.
Well, I like you too, and it's something that I think makes the journey very worthwhile, because everything that cuts the journey short relates to fear.
Isn't that the truth? So tell us just briefly this whole blend of your being and how you got into the martial arts and Zen and realizing and seeing those connections to the leadership domains.
You know, it's funny how we find our life. It's one of those things where one step leads to another. I originally had gotten into martial arts for self-defense when I was in college and taking light classes.
Okay.
And yet, after a few years, I found a great teacher, just a world-class Aikido teacher named Fumio Toyota, who became a lifelong mentor to me. And he told me after some time in training that if you want to be really great at this, you have to also start Zen training. I didn't know exactly why he said that at the time, but okay. I trusted my teacher, and that was very much a part of his background. So I started in Zen training in graduate school and never stopped. It was really something where after some time I could see this is changing everything about the way I live my life.
Well, and that connectivity with the whole mind-body-spirit piece, I think people know in this day and age to talk about that more in a popular way, even in other leadership domains, but the fact you are doing this, I'll say, really ahead of, as a pioneer, to see those interface points.
You know, I was always interested in energy and the human body. I mean, that was one of the reasons I went into biophysics as a graduate student and wanted to learn how are we put together? How does this thing that we're walking through life with work? And I think I learned a lot from the Western science perspective, but the real opening came through the more meditative traditions and the martial arts, because it happens physically. That kind of inside-out awareness and that integration happens in the mind-body as a system.
Well, you know, I mentioned in the introduction, of course, that you had quite a career at NASA. So can you help me first with this leap between studying energy in the body and biophysics and NASA and integrating and collecting technical people to make something as magnanimous as the space station happen?
Right. Well, you know, I think even as a little kid watching the space race and the astronauts, that was probably my first glimpse of a sort of integrated life, you know, of mind body together. You know, these were people who were clearly physically trained but also very intelligent and scientific, and I think that really captured me as a kid, just the excitement of it, the adventure of it. And I wrote NASA when I was 13 years old saying, what do I take in college to be best prepared for my life as an astronaut?
Yeah,
right. And they did write back, but they said just go into science, you know, take, you know, aeronautical engineering or astrophysics or something, you know, physics and engineering, which I did. I took every science and math class under the sun. And when I got out of graduate school, I did apply to NASA to follow that dream. I also went into science. I was working at Bell Laboratories at the time. But NASA invited me down to interview for the job. And later to work there. And I ended up going into management, not into space, but learned so much on that journey.
Well, there would probably be some that would say, though, if we're part of management, we're probably lost in space, too, though. So I think there's probably some way that that would circle back and get us both, you know, as many of our colleagues in the work world would say, yep, you went to the right place there, Jenny.
That's right.
Well, you know, joking aside, though, what an interesting career path that you've had, and then to step off and go on your own and take the step to share with others the, in some ways, the mystery you uncover to advance your own capability. And I don't mean necessarily promotions and the name on the wall and the secretary outside the door and so on, but I mean your own awareness of what you could make and how you could be in the world.
But, well, you know, it was the combination of working at NASA and working on the space station by day and seeing the kind of stress and pressures that leaders and all of us were under every day with the kind of pressure-charged environment to get this thing right. And then I'd go to the dojo at night. I was running a training center for Aikido and Zen at the time in Houston, and I'd be teaching at night, and I'd see how people were using the physical training to become more centered, more healthy, more resilient. And I just knew these two worlds had to come together, and I wanted to really devote my life to that.
Well, and in no small way, of course, because you've had the opportunity to cultivate your models, your thinking, your training, and help quite a broad cross-section of leaders across these different industries, and specifically touch in and help people in the consulting business, which it doesn't come any more pressure cooker than that. You know, get in, get out, you know, accelerate and move on. So the principles that you've seen over the years help so many other people. Congratulations.
Well, you're kind to say that. I think your life is similarly dedicated. You're right. It is a bit of a pressure cooker in terms of make a difference and show people how they can make that difference endure and sustain in their own lives.
So here we are today now. You've just released your new book, The Zen Leader, 10 Ways to go from Barely Managing to Leading Fearlessly. And I would, of course, have to ask you that question. So why did you write your book?
Okay. I felt absolutely moved to write it. I think it was running around in my head for years.
Since one of the sutras,
one of the readings I had come across in my Zen training years ago called the Surangama Sutra really hit me like a ton of bricks in terms of that we have everything backwards, including our basic sense of who we are. We get everything backwards. And to say it like that sounds like, what are you talking about? But what the way we're wired and the way we our whole nervous system functions, we notice everything that's moving. We don't notice what's still. And in that basic backwardsness, we catch an aspect of ourselves that's kind of like all the moving parts, but we miss another aspect of ourselves that is quiet and still, that is empty. And it was that awareness that I said, somehow I need to bring this out to people because it is the foundation for fearlessness. But how do I do that? And that was kind of sitting in my head for many years until one day, literally sitting on the cushion, I had this sense that it's time to write this book, and got up from meditating and went to my desk and just wrote out the 10 chapter titles. And I've been writing a long time. That kind of writing doesn't usually happen for me. So that was a new experience, and something that was when I knew it was time to write the book.
Well, I think the other piece, like you explained, is you were going through one of the practices that you preach and you enable others to do, and lo and behold, it brought you that epiphany, or, you know, it opened up the floodgate, being in that stillness.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think it's being written out of that stillness that made this book even special for me to write it.
You know, I know we have our listeners who are both in organizations and are fraught with change, whether they are choosing to be there or it is happening to them. And then leaders also that are guiding through change. And I bet you 99% of them, it never dawned on them that the first step when they're in the fray of something should be to find stillness. Instead, it is more, how many more meetings can I jam on my calendar? How many more phone calls? How many more emails, texts, whatever? And to think that, you know, like some of us, like myself, when I get on an airplane, I love the fact nobody can find me and that I need to grab that time. It's not just to recoup and replenish, but to actually listen to what probably I already know that I'm not allowing to come out.
Exactly. You know, we don't usually think about where our thoughts come from. But when we keep throwing ourselves into a flurry of action, or as you say, one meeting after another, we tend to think along very prescribed lines. To really let inspiration emerge, some different quality of thought has to be allowed or enabled. Mm-hmm. And that, in my experience, comes from that deep stillness, that centeredness, the quietude that you can create the conditions for, but you can't plan exactly what's going to pop out.
Yeah, either plan what it is or when it's going to come at the same time. Well, Jenny, the term Zen, it's so often overused. It's confused. It's looked kind of woo-woo, whatever. So help our listeners who may not understand, what is Zen, and particularly why does that matter in leadership?
Yeah, it is a confusing term because the word Zen is sort of like looking at the menu of a restaurant. You know, you're trying to imagine the food. Any description of Zen doesn't capture it. And that's why it can, you know, be the brunt of jokes, or it can mm-hmm. be, you know, a rock garden, or it can be a pithy statement. But Zen, the experience of Zen is getting out of one's own way, where a sense of spontaneous free expression can come through mm-hmm. who you are. That getting out of our own way is getting the kind of doubt and stutter stepping of the ego out of our way so that we can simply be where we are. It sounds so simple, and yet so many of our doubts and fears and, you know, hold us back that we tend to second guess ourselves, in some sense become our own worst enemy. It's becoming our own best friend that allows us to really open up and realize that what I call the Zen leader in us, in each of us.
Well, you've, of course, had the benefit of years of practice, both on your own introspection and being with your teachers throughout the world that you studied under, and now you've gifted others. And then you've also, of course, done a lot of workshops and training programs, and these aren't just two-hour workshops. Our listeners should appreciate Jenny gets in and has week-long, if not longer, engagement with groups of leaders. I got to imagine when you address those groups of leaders that there have got to be some real cynics that are sitting there with their arms across their chest. And how is it you break down some of that language or that vocabulary, and has that become easier over the years as some of these techniques have become more popular in the, you know, common everyday swim lanes for us?
I think it is. It does become more common or more popular. There's probably fewer people with their arms across their chest as I might have found 10 or 15 years ago. But truthfully, what uncrosses people's arms is their own experience. You know, when they just look at their own lives, as your listeners might even know, and they realize there's some parts of it that aren't working, or that some parts of it where they're hustling to keep up with things, a kind of a relentless pace that seems to keep getting faster. And it seems to land heaviest on the shoulders of high-achieving people, you know, who are often in leadership positions. And if you were successful this quarter, your reward for it is you get a higher target next year with cutting resources. Or, you know, the game just has a way of escalating until even very sharp and talented people can get a sense of a frenetic, relentless pace.
Yeah, in fact,
then I come in.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, in fact, our previous guest talked about, are you running away from success? And at good times, that's why, is people are realizing, oh, man, I got to go do this again and even do it better, stronger, faster, quicker.
Exactly. And so where I will start with people is that sense of how they can center and ground themselves right now, finding that peace, that stillness in themselves, and from inside out, how they can start to use their energy differently, rather than starting from a place of tension, starting from extension.
Right, exactly.
Find principles from martial arts and things that, again, have been a part of my training, but are ever so practical for leadership.
You bet. I'm speaking with Jenny Whitelaw. Her book is The Zen Leader, Ways to Go, 10 Ways to Go from Barely Managing to Leading Fearlessly. And we should mention, of course, this book isn't just for those of you who might, on the org chart have a leadership position, because we all have this kind of frenetic life on our place. Jenny, the way you structure your book, of course, is you take readers through 10, as you call them, flips in consciousness. What do you mean by a flip?
I mean by flip, and the reason I use that word is it came from that sense that we have everything backwards and we have to flip around how we normally look at things, starting with, or ultimately ending with, our sense of self. But even that initial flip that we were just sort of talking about, from kind of coping with the pace that seems to be picking up to how do you lead, boom, from inside out, from a centered place where I can actually extend my energy into transforming a situation. That is a fundamental flip in the body. And I show people in the book and in my programs how to experience that from inside out. So it's not just words heard on the radio or words read on a page, but it's their own physical experience. Once people get a sense of how this flip happens inside out, they understand why these flips accompany radical reframings of the way we approach leadership. It really is very different if I'm playing defense, you know, and trying to put up with forces out there versus moving into it like the eye of the storm. And from there, the only way is out, and extending my energy outward into the situation.
So several of your flips, of course, use the popular words of reframing or looking at it from a different perspective. But I think the other ones that really caught me off guard as I was reading your book are the real simple things like, you know, don't tense your elbow up, but relax it. Or just slow the pace at which you're walking to a meeting as opposed to speed it up. Or the whole element of play, how critical that can be.
Element of play and being able to open things up rather than just tighten them down. And you're mentioning things like relaxing your arm rather than tightening your arm. These flips start so simple and so basic in the body, but they keep building on one another. That's why there's 10 of them that allow us to keep opening things up so that, to the point of playing to your strengths, for example. There's been a lot in our field, as you know, about whether leaders should just play to their strengths and hope everyone else compensates for their weaknesses, or do you shore up your weaknesses? How do you play that? You know, how do you work that? And what this set of flips will show people is first how to know their strengths and then physically how they can flip into any sort of energetic pattern that's going to serve them now as a leader, including the frames of mind that are very inspiring and innovative and playful.
Jenny, could you cite a couple examples of some clients you've worked with that you've helped them take, you know, maybe a small flip that turned out to be a big result or a big flip that even was even bigger?
There's a lot of stories in the book around different clients I've worked with whose stories are shared there. I think one that just happened for me recently was someone who read the book, and we were also coaching together, and he was completely struck by a flip. It's flip number 7 from driving results to attracting the future.
Oh yeah,
attracting the future. There's been a lot of new agey kind of woo-woo stuff written about, but my approach to it is maybe a little different than what others have seen out there, where it comes from how to enter a quiet state from which real inspiration can arise, and then how you build a driving rhythm to move toward that vision that really can bring along others with it. He realized what he'd been doing was push on what he was trying to make happen, and that the more he did, the less others followed. And he had to completely flip that around, get very clear about where he was going, and then notice how he could create momentum through others toward that vision. So it really freed him up.
Oh, and that is the classic. I mean, take this book down to the personal level and how we manage in our families. For those of us who have teens or preteens, the idea of pushing them to clean their rooms is not going to get that one to happen for sure.
That's right. And it is often the harder we push or the more we do that we end up sort of suppressing the great efforts of those around us rather than bringing them out. And of course, for leadership, bringing the greatness out of other people is core to making bigger things happen.
You bet. Well, Jenny, again, we're speaking with Jenny Whitelaw. Her book is The Zen Leader, 10 Ways to Go from Barely Managing to Leading Fearlessly. You can go to www.zenleader.com or also her organization, focusleadership.com. So you had this epiphany hit you. You published your you wrote, you published, you're now out letting your child live on the earth. What have the reactions been so far, and how do you feel it's pulling you now in a new direction potentially?
Well, it's a great question, because you're right. You let the child live on earth, and you don't exactly know what's going to happen, because it isn't totally in one's control. I've been so pleased at the messages I get from readers, and I receive one almost every day of somebody who says, this is really helping me, or these lessons are helping me, these exercises are helping me. We give people a way to download exercises from the website so they actually can do more than just read the book. They can practice it. Mm-hmm. And I hear from people all the time and how that practice is helping them. So that makes me feel great. The other side of how a book lives out in the world, of course, is how do you get noticed in a very noisy world? And I think that's still a work in progress as this book becomes a build that I think is coming more from one person referring it to the next and saying, oh, this really helped me, and then passing it to another person. So that is still the child growing.
Well, I think it's fun, too, because you know certain people that will refer it, and others will walk away and say, oh, yeah, no, but not for me. This is not the approach I'm going to take. You know, I need the book that says strategy or the conventional words around leadership, but to realize there's another set and approach. Well, so far, it might be early to ask you this question, but how do you think having the book out there and seeing, again, kind of your own mirror and reflection of all your years of work so portrayed here is now indicating a new place for you to go to? Any thoughts of where you're headed now?
Yeah, you know, one thing that happens when you put your work out there is other people doing similar things find you, and that's right. Already happening, right?
Indeed,
and
I found you.
That's right, exactly. I've spoken with Alan Shelton, who wrote Awakened Leadership. You know, I mean, I'm starting to find other people who are very interested in this area of enlightened leaders and how to create a more mature kind of leader for a world that desperately needs it. And to that point, one of the things that became clear to me that I had to go toward this year is launching an institute for Zen leadership, and that's becoming a new direction for me. We launched this fall with some programs at a wonderful Rinzai Zen temple in rural Wisconsin, where we're bringing leaders to that kind of inspired setting for a deeper immersion into Zen and leadership than we could do in a typical corporate program.
Oh, and for sure, because I'm sure, like many those like you and I, we've seen all the great conference rooms of the world, but to actually create a sanctuary from which you can grow in the inside out, that's a whole other set of challenges and opportunities, isn't it?
It sure is. It really, and it, this is a kind of setting where you really could grow at a whole leaping level. So this is going to be a brave new experiment, and it's something I'm very excited about.
Well, you know, I think you mentioned earlier that you had a day life at NASA and a night life, you know, being a dojo and doing your training and Zen work and coaching others. The fact you've been able to integrate these pieces together at this phase of your life and still have those unknown doors to open up, bravo for you. I continue, and I wish you all the best in that venture.
Well, I thank you so much. I think that when we find our lives, it keeps finding us as well, doesn't it?
Oh, I like that. It's going to find. In other words, you can run, but you can't hide, right? That's true. Well, we've had a really pleasurable time. Our guest again was Dr. Ginny Whitelaw. Her book is The Zen Leader, 10 Ways to Go from Barely Managing to Leading Fearlessly. Go out to zenleader.com or focusleadership.com. And perhaps, Ginny, a year from now, we're going to tap you and find out how everything's going out at the Institute. So thank you so much for giving of your time here today.
Thank you so much. You do wonderful work.
Well, we're going to keep at it, and I'm going to find a way to take a deeper breath and apply some of these Zen management techniques as I deal with all the stuff in my day as well.
Excellent.
Very good. Take care.
Take care.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.